test is in four part, part 1, part 2, part 3, and part 4. Now look at part 1.
Part 1.
You will hear a telephone conversation between a client who wants to rent short-term accommodation and a rental agent. First, you have some time to look at questions 1 to 5. Now, we shall begin. You should answer the questions as you listen, because you will not hear the recording a second time. Listen carefully and answer questions 1 to 5. Good morning. Ace Accommodation. How can I help you?
Good morning. I'd like to organise some short-stay accommodation on the Gold Coast, please.
Certainly. Who am I speaking to?
Miss McKinley. Sylvia McKinley.
Could you spell your family name for me, please?
It's McKinley.
Thank you. And your first name is Sylvia?
Yes.
Is that with an I or a Y?
A Y, the old-fashioned way. That's S-Y-L-V-I-A.
Thank you, Miss McKinley. Now, just for our records, can you tell me what country you live in?
Of course. It's England, actually.
I thought so. Now, when are you coming?
Well, at the moment, we're planning on arriving on July the 26th.
Oh, the 25th. That's the last day of the public holiday, and it might be difficult to find something available on that date.
No, we're coming on the 26th of July.
Oh, well, that's fine then. We'll have lots of good places vacant by then, although you wouldn't be able to move in until late afternoon, because our cleaning crew will need time to get everything ready for you.
That suits us. Our flight won't get in until early evening anyway.
How many of you will there be?
Just my sister and myself.
And how long do you intend to stay for?
Oh, only a couple of weeks. We'd like to stay longer, but we'll have to get back to work.
So, you're not coming on business then?
No, it's just a holiday. Why, what difference does that make?
Oh, you'd be surprised. Business people have different needs. You know, wireless internet, even fax machines and photocopiers.
No, we won't need any of that stuff. We'll be coming to relax and get away from all that kind of thing.
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 6 to 10. Now listen and answer questions 6 to 10. Good. Now, what exactly are you looking for? A house, a duplex, or an apartment?
What's a duplex?
Oh, that's what you might call a townhouse or a unit. You know, two houses semi-detached on the same property.
Oh, I see. I think an apartment will suit us just fine.
And how many bedrooms? Two.
One or two, it depends on the size. My sister and I don't mind sharing, if it's a decent-sized bedroom with two beds.
Well, that makes it easier. And car parking? Will you require a lock-up garage? They're a little harder to find with an apartment.
We'll have a hire car, and as far as I know, there are no regulations concerning car parking. I think as long as it's not parked on the street and it's secure, there shouldn't be any problems.
Okay. Now, I'm assuming you want something by the beach.
Yes, that's the idea. We want to enjoy the surf, sand and sunshine.
Okay, but before we settle on an area and discuss your price range, I'll need to know about other necessities.
What do you mean?
Well, for example, do you want to be close to a shopping mall or the casino or the fun parks? Or do you want to be in a complex with or near a swimming pool?
No, none of that really matters to us. But we'd like to have reasonable access to the motorway so that we can drive up to Brisbane to visit friends there.
Well, there are quite a few lovely small towns to choose from. There's Main Beach, which is north of Surfer's Paradise, or Mermaid Waters, which is a bit further south, or Palm Beach, which is quite a bit further south.
Mermaid Waters sounds delightful. Is it close to the motorway?
Well, not really. The M1 is actually closest to Palm Beach, and prices are likely to be more reasonable there too.
That's settled then. Palm Beach it is.
Now, if you'll just give me your email address, I can send you information about the town and lots of photos.
Well, my email is smac13@hotmail.com.
And one final thing. How much are you looking to spend per week on accommodation? Do you want something at the luxury end of the market? You know, newly redecorated, great views, all the mod cons?
Not necessarily. Could we get something clean, comfortable and reasonable for $1,200 a week?
Could you stretch that to $1,500 a week? I've got a property in mind that you'll absolutely love, but you'd have to go to $1,500. $1,200 wouldn't cover it.
All right, then, but that's our top limit.
Good. I'll get on to this straight away, and there should be something in your inbox shortly.
That is the end of part one.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part two.
Part two.
You will hear a conversation between a travel agent and a customer.
First, you have some time to look at questions 11 to 17. Now, listen carefully and answer questions 11 to 17.
Good morning. Can I help you?
Yes, I'd like to get some information about trips to New Zealand.
Certainly. Take a seat and I'll be right with you.
Thanks.
Now, where would you like to go in New Zealand?
Well, I was hoping to do a bit of travelling around, actually. There are a few things I'd like to see and do before I go back home.
Right.
One thing I really want to do is go to Christchurch. I have relatives living there that I can stay with, my mother's cousin, and I've heard it's a nice place.
Yes, it's a lovely city, and staying with relatives will help with the budget, of course.
The budget?
It will save you some money.
Oh, right. Well, I'm not too worried about that. I've saved quite a bit of money working in Australia.
Oh, that's nice. Good for you. Well, you know that New Zealand consists of two main islands, the North Island and the South Island, and Christchurch is on the South Island.
Is it? I was never very good at geography at school. Do you have a map I could look at?
Sure. Here we are.
Right, I see. And... Well, then I'd also like to spend some time in Auckland, and maybe I could do an English language course there. Can you organise that sort of thing for me?
Oh, certainly. We'd be happy to arrange that. But bear in mind that Auckland is in the North Island.
Okay. And I'd also like to do some skiing or maybe even some snowboarding. I hear New Zealand is a great place for that.
Yes, absolutely. But you should go to Auckland first for your studies, and then you can get the ferry across to the South Island and take the bus down to the snow.
Oh, I don't like boats very much. I'm not much of a sailor. I think I'd prefer to fly.
Right. What about joining a walking tour? That could be really fun.
Not sure about walking, but joining a tour might be a good way to travel because then I might make some friends my own age.
Now, let's get some details. Can I have your name, please?
Yes, it's Sue Ming Lee, but you can call me Sue.
Okay, Sue. And what's your address here in Melbourne?
I'm living with my aunt in the suburb of Kew. It's 29 Lock Street. That's L-O-C-H, not L-O-C-K.
Do you have a phone number that I can get you on?
The best thing would be if I give you my mobile. I always have it on me. It's 0402-558-992.
Okay. And when do you want to travel? Because you'll need to be down south in July or August.
Oh, yes, of course. That's winter, isn't it? So I better go to Auckland in May.
Yes. Let's say departing from Melbourne on the 1st of May. That's a Saturday.
Mm.
And then you could begin your course on Monday the 3rd.
That sounds great.
And how long would you like to study for? A month, two, three? What do you think?
Well, I'll probably need more than a month. What about 8 weeks until the end of June?
Fine. I'll see what I can do. Oh, and how would you like to pay for this?
On my Visa card, if that's possible.
Before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 18 to 20. Now listen and answer questions 18 to 20.
Hello, Sue. It's Angelo from Cosmos Travel here. I've booked your flight and I've found you an English college called the Harbour Language Centre.
Great. Where exactly is that?
Well, have you got that little map I gave you yesterday?
Yes.
You see where the harbour is with the three wharves and the water?
Yes. Got that.
Okay. There are two parallel streets. Key Street. That's Quay and Customs Street. The building where the college is located is on Quay Street, opposite Prince's Wharf.
Right. Got it. And what about accommodation?
Well, I've booked you into a hotel for the first 3 nights, and then the accommodation officer will find you a family to live with.
Good. And where's the hotel?
It's a short walk from the college, on the corner of Queen Street and City Road.
Which corner exactly?
On the left-hand side, as we're looking at the map.
Okay, near the little park.
Yes, that's right.
And what about a good bookshop? I'm going to need to buy a dictionary and some English books.
Yes, well, I believe there's a really good language bookshop on the corner of Customs Street and Queen Street. It's near the college, so that's pretty convenient.
Thank you so much. You've been really helpful.
That is the end of part two.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turns to part three.
Part three.
You will hear some students talking about their studies.
First, you have some time to look at questions 21 to 24. Now, listen carefully and answer questions 21 to 24.
It was packed. There simply aren't enough seats in Theatre 4. There were people on the stairs, people in the aisles. I don't imagine everybody was able to get in.
Was Jack with you?
No, of course not. I saw him with a pile of journals in the library as I walked past. You haven't seen him because you've been in here, in the kitchen, drinking coffee all morning, whereas he has been studying hard.
Not me. I've been in my bedroom reading for my assignment on education in the classical world. Very interesting. It was easier than I expected. I should have been at the gym training for my next race, but that'll have to wait. And did you find your first lecture interesting?
Absolutely fascinating. We talked about this experiment. If you show a child a litre of water in a bucket and show him a litre of water in a tall container, he always thinks that the higher, taller but narrower container has more water in it.
Hold on, what do you show him?
Right, you show him two things. A bucket with a litre of water in it and also a tall glass vase-like thing or any tall container. This also has a litre of water in it. Now, he will say that the tall thing has more in it than the short, fat thing, that is, the bucket.
Mm.
And all children will say this, that is, up to about 5 years of age. You can then actually pour a litre of water from the bucket into the taller, narrower container, and the child will still say that the tall container contains more water, even though he's just seen the water come out of the bucket.
And what's the point of that? Is it about measurement?
No, it showed how children are quite unable to think logically. It's connected with my assignment. It's about cognitive development of young children over time. That's to say, it's about how they think.
Hmm.
But didn't you do that assignment last year?
No, I didn't. You see, I missed out on the first year when I changed subject.
Before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 25 to 30. Now listen and answer questions 25 to 30.
I started psychology in the second year, which is where I am now.
Lucky you.
I'm not so sure. I've missed out on a lot of the basic stuff like that, and I will have to catch up in my own time, so I'm relying on you.
Oh yes, I remember. What did you study before you changed?
I studied law.
Why didn't you continue?
I found some of the subjects interesting enough. In fact, the criminal area was fascinating in general. But a lot of the law is very technical. It's full of little details which can be very difficult to understand. And I've got a terrible memory too. I could never get all the rules and exceptions into my head. My number one hate really was international trade, which was a minefield of rules and exceptions. In fact, I think it was a complete nightmare.
But law is such a popular subject. Lots of people would like to study it.
I'm sure they would, but they often don't realise that it's very book-based. You spend most of your time reading about famous cases sitting in a stuffy library, and very occasionally you get out to a lecture or maybe a seminar.
What do you find that's better about psychology?
Most of all, I like the experimental psychology we have to study. This involves doing something, so it's practical. And with any luck, you can make a small, OK, very small, contribution to knowledge.
Hmm.
And it is so useful in many careers, for example, business, commerce, education.
Law is too, you know.
Yes, but the training is so long. You have to spend at least another 2 years on a professional practice course before you can start working. No, I'm happy with psychology.
Well, as a psychology student too, I must say I agree with absolutely everything you've said, of course.
That is the end of part three.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part four.
Part four.
The formation of amber and its applications in different fields. First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 40. Now, listen carefully and answer questions 31 to 40.
Tonight I'm going to present an overview of the research on amber. OK, I'll start by giving a brief introduction about amber, then talk about the formation of amber, and then describe amber's applications in different fields. First of all, what is amber? Amber is not a stone, but is ancient fossilized tree resin, which is the semi-solid amorphous organic substance secreted in pockets and canals through epithelial cells of the plant. And why is resin produced? Although there are contrasting views as to why resin is produced, it is a plant's protection mechanism. The resin may be produced to protect the tree from disease and injury inflicted by insects and fungi. Amber occurs in a range of different colors. Besides the usual yellow, orange, and brown, other uncommon colors are also associated with it. Interestingly, blue amber, the rarest Dominican amber, is highly sought after. It's only found in Santiago, Dominican Republic. There are several theories about what causes the blue color in amber. The most common one links it to the occurrence of volcanic dust that was present when the resin was first pressed out from Hymenaea Proterra millions of years ago. At this point, you might be curious about how amber is formed. Molecular polymerization resulting from high pressures and temperatures produced by overlying sediment transforms the resin first into copal. Sustained heat and pressure drives off terpenes and results in the formation of amber. Copal, that I've just mentioned, is also a tree resin, but it hasn't fully fossilized to amber. More generally, the term copal describes resinous substances in an intermediate stage of polymerization and hardening between gummier resins and amber. So where can we find amber? It can be found on seashores. The main producer worldwide is Russia. In fact, about 90% of the world's available amber is located in the Kaliningrad region of Russia, which is located on the Baltic. Here, the resin is washed up on the coast after being dislodged from the ocean floor by years of water and ocean currents. However, exposure to sunlight, rain, and temperate extremes tends to disintegrate resin. This also indicates that amber is not really an ideal fossil preservative for most uses. We've already learned that amber is made of tree resin. It often includes insects that were trapped within the tree many millions of years ago. A piece with a visible and well-arranged insect is generally valued much higher than simple, solid amber. One Dominican amber source reported finding a butterfly with a 5-inch wingspread. This is both a large and unusual find, and most butterfly specimens have no more than a 2-inch wingspan. Inclusions in Dominican amber are numerous, one inclusion to every 100 pieces. Baltic amber contains approximately one inclusion to every 1,000 pieces. Now that you have a basic knowledge of amber, I'd like to talk a bit about amber's application in different fields. First, amber is appreciated for its color and beauty. Good quality amber is used to manufacture ornamental objects and jewelry. For instance, using a variety of exclusive, first-class quality natural Baltic amber with silver to make natural amber jewelry. But due to the biodegradation of amber fossils, people with amber jewelry have to take special care of it to ensure that the amber is not damaged. It was previously believed that amber worn on the neck served to protect one from diseases of the throat and preserved the sound mind. Callistrate, a famous doctor in the Roman Empire, wrote that amber powder mixed with honey cures throat, eye, and ear diseases, and if it is taken with water, eases stomachache. While the mystery around that use of amber has not been cleared, one thing is sure, it will help effectively to defeat small malaises. Amber has even been used as a building material. Amber created the altar in St. Brigida Church in Gdansk, Poland. In St. Petersburg, Russia, the walls of the famous Amber Room were lined with intricate carvings and inlaid designs. This palace room is being reconstructed from photographs and can be visited at the Catherine Palace, located in the town of Tsarskoye Selo. And finally, the fourth use of amber is that...
That is the end of part 4.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.